We say hello to Teron Davenport, covers the Titans for ESPN.com. Teron, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
What's new and exciting? We all had that one pegged, huh?
Yeah, right. I guess the Titans made all of us look bad this past week. But, hey, you know, good for them. That was a great win for that team. And, you know, let's see if they could really use that to kind of launch them towards a better second half of the season.
The way they're playing on defense right now, the numbers prove how good they are in the league. Why is it working so well? I mean, if you would have told me, Teron, going into that game that they were going to hold the Patriots to 10 points, I mean, I would probably still be on the floor laughing so incredibly hard, but they did. Why is it working on defense?
Yeah, I think it's just the way this team is playing, just team defense. And you look at the way they flow to the football. You look at how the front end is taking care of things as far as getting pressure on the quarterback, helping the back end, and then the back end is helping. Listen, no one's talking about it, but Adoree Jackson shut Josh Gordon down last week.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that really has to be noted. And I came on here back in August, and I said that Adoree was going to be the best corner on this team before the year's out, and he's proven it. So you have to look at that. But another guy that's really just flying under the radar is Jayon Brown. Everybody has all this talk about John Robinson is a bad GM, this, that, and the third. But he got the guy who leads the team in tackles, sacks, tackles for loss, and the second in QB hits in the fifth round a couple years ago, you know, back in this last year, 17. So, you know, let's give John Robinson credit for getting a guy like Jayon Brown, and his energy is really helping. And Wesley Woodyard, he's playing really well. Obviously, Jarrell Casey, another under-the-radar one is Kenny Vaccaro. He doesn't show up in the box scores, but you look at that play he had, the first play of the game where he came up, and I think it was James White. You know, he gave him the business, you know, brought the wood and had that tackle for the loss and just kind of set the tone. And that's what you see him doing against the run, too. He's coming up there, blowing up offensive linemen so that someone else could go in and make the tackle. But Carl's an unsung hero on this team.
Did the league have it wrong on their approach of facing the Patriots and the 41-year-old Tom Brady? Because we knew, we talked about it the whole week leading up to the game. Nobody was willing to go after Tom Brady. I mean, 12% of the time, which was amazing. That was mind-blowing when we kept saying that out loud. So everybody was backing off. Did the Titans tell the league backing off is the wrong way to go about it? You need to pressure him?
Yeah, I think they did. But it's not only that you need to pressure him, you also need to be able to take away that first read. Because when you look at Brady, right, he's clearly one of the best quarterbacks ever. Let's make no mistake about it. But if you make him go through all of his progressions, he starts to get a little antsy back there and he starts to get impatient. And that's one of the ways that you can really get to him. When you get up there and you clog those immediate passing lanes that guys like Edelman, when they try to run those rub routes, when they try to run those quick slants and those in-breaking routes, that's what Brady likes to hit them with. And when you take that away as his first option and you disrupt the timing, that's what happens. So they did a good job on both ends as far as, getting pressure on him and making him have to work through his progressions actually read the defense a little bit more and take away where he wants to go with the ball right off the bat.
Speaking of that, going through your progressions, I kind of feel like Marcus Mariota has really done that. It started in London against the Chargers. It carried over to Monday Night Football in Dallas, and then it was there again on Sunday. There are certain plays I noticed. One, he's reading the field differently. I want to know if you've noticed the same thing. And there's been times, and there was a couple opportunities in particular in the New England game where he had nothing, and that was the time, if that was week three, he was pulling the ball down and he was going to take off and run. And you know what he didn't do? He just bought some time, he hung in there, and he made the throw, completed the pass, and it was good enough for a first down. Are you noticing the same thing? And if so, why is that happening now? Is that just his comfortability in this system now?
Yeah, that's an awesome point, and that's really what you're seeing. And basically what's happening is Marcus Mariota is maturing and devouring this offense right in front of our eyes. And this is something that we said was going to happen. You know, over time, he's going to get better and better within it. This is a scheme that you don't, just typically come in and just, hit the ground running. It takes a little bit of time. But when you look at just the things that he's able to do, and I think the confidence that he's having and the timing that they're able to have between he and the receivers, you saw that really start to happen in the Cowboys game where that ball was coming out before these guys were making their breaks. And then you saw two really good instances of that happening against the Patriots. One, that Cameron Batson throw. First and foremost, you know, he's from close to the opposite hash, and he delivers a corner route outside the numbers, you know, to the opposite side of the field to Cameron Batson. A beautiful throw, right? And you look at Cameron Batson, if you go back and watch the play, before Batson even stuck his foot in the ground and exploded to that corner route, that ball is out there. And that's really important. That's really key, because when you are able to put the ball out there like that and you allow the receiver to accelerate to the ball, it will keep him in bounds, right? So he was able to get both feet down and haul in the catch. It was a great catch. And then the touchdown to Corey Davis, where you saw him kind of attack the line of scrimmage and then throw the ball after Corey Davis made the double move, you know, right before Davis got out the break, he threw it to that corner of the end zone and just allowed him to go get it. To be honest with you, fellas, he couldn't have handed the ball to Corey Davis in a better position than that. So that was an outstanding play. And even the Jonnu Smith touchdown, what you're seeing is him using his legs to give the defense something else to think about. And it's allowing these guys to get open and to buy time. And that's what Mike Vrabel was talking about when he said allow him to use his natural, his God-given ability. And he's a dual-threat guy. So, you know, you always have to have a spy on him, and that's what happened in the Jonnu touchdown. You know, he was able to attack the line of scrimmage. You had McCourty spying him, and then you had Jonnu Smith get a really good release, gave Patrick Chung a jab step to the outside, and it came across the middle, and that jab step gave Patrick Chung just that little bit of hesitation, and it allowed Jonnu to bust it across the middle, and it was wide open. It was a great throw, and I mean, that's what you're seeing. It's just confidence across the board between the receivers, the quarterback, even the offensive coordinator who's getting in a groove. I mean, Matt LaFleur was in his bag, man. You know, he called the Philly special right after the Patriots did. He had the option, and then you had Wildcat. He called an awesome game. So these are all things to look at. As a unit, they're more confident.
Mariota threw the ball so well Sunday, he gave his receivers no choice but to catch the football in some of those instances. That's how dialed in he was. So, Teron, now that you've seen Marcus healthy for a few games and playing in this offense, is he answering the $100 million question a lot of people have about the long-term future with this franchise? What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, and that's something that I wrote about before the Cowboys game. And I'll say this, right, and I'll present this question to anybody. Would you rather have Marcus Mariota at $100 million or Jimmy Garoppolo at $137 million? You make the call, right, because you can't tell me that Garoppolo is a better, more proven quarterback than Marcus Mariota is. So for me, I mean, it's tough to approach that $100 million plateau. I think he should be more in along the lines of a Alex Smith type of deal, $94 million and you know, 50 to 60 guaranteed. But he definitely has earned the right to be this team's quarterback of the future. And anyone thinking of moving on from him is crazy. I don't think there's any way this team should even consider moving on. But when you have a $100 million guy, it comes down to, is he like an Aaron Rodgers? Is he like a Drew Brees, a Tom Brady, you know, that can make other guys, Phillip Rivers, that can make other guys around him better? And that's really the question that he has to continue to answer. So far, I think he is answering that, because you look at what he was able to do with Corey Davis. You look at how, you know, John was coming around. You look at how Tajae Sharpe has been so consistent. I think he's approaching that $100 million plateau, but he just has to continue to show that he can make these guys better. Because when you have that much dedicated towards a quarterback, you know, you're going to have limited resources otherwise. So you have to be able to get the best out of, you know, less than top of the line elite talent at other positions.
I think he's done that the last 2 weeks. He just has to stay healthy and continue to show that he can do that down the course of the season. We're talking with NFL Nation Titans reporter Teron Davenport from ESPN. Teron, I wasn't in this scrum on Sunday, and you were the first person I saw that at least tweeted out the quote. Were you at all surprised with how candid Deion Lewis got about what that win against the Patriots meant to him, considering all the things that the guy said during the week leading up to it about how really it was just another game?
No, I wasn't surprised, because if you know Deion, he's the guy's a little firecracker, right? And it takes being that way to be that size and be a feature back the way he is. So I wasn't surprised about it. You know, he always has that chip on his shoulder, you know, so it just was emotions that came out. And I mean, I loved it, you know. And right before that, he said, I forget exactly what he said, but he was just talking about how, you know, it was a good win and it was good to see all his guys come together. And then when that question was asked about it being personal and he gave that answer, it was just perfect. And, you know, I definitely expected that kind of – I'm not going to say I expected it. It didn't surprise me that he was that candid. Not at all.
Yeah, I loved it for the same reason, frankly, that I love Kevin Byard stomping on the star in Dallas. Those were things that when this team struggled, you never saw that type of swagger. Now they've got a little bit of it. I think the fan base enjoys that, and I know for fans, Teron, some people, they're wondering where the national attention will come from this team. So for the fans out there that call us every day here, Darren, I've got a question for you, Teron, that doesn't really matter, but I'm going to give you guys ESPN a little bit of a hard time. This week you have the Titans 14th in the power rankings, behind the Eagles, behind the Patriots, behind the Texans, whom they've all beaten, and the other team in front of them, the Chargers. They were a two-point conversion try away from winning that game. Do you, as the guy who covers the Titans every day, do you think your organization at ESPN has the Titans too low right now at 14?
Well, to be honest, I had them at 14 also, and because they sent a poll out, we make our votes. I had the Titans at 14. I just didn't have the Eagles ahead of them and the Texans ahead of them. And, I mean, listen, the Texans have a better record right now, and, yeah, the Titans – beat the Texans, but the Texans are riding, what, a 6-8 win streak. So, I mean, if you put them at 13 and you put the Titans at 14, okay. Or if you put, you know, vice versa, that's not really a big thing. As far as the Patriots and the Chargers, I don't see any reason for them not to be in front of the Titans. But that's the whole thing. What you're doing right now, what we are doing together right now, is the whole reason why you have these polls, these rankings, is because it sparks conversation, right? And I think that's really the key. But, you know, from being in Philadelphia last year and watching this team have the best record in football and consistently still not be the number one team, look, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? End of the day, this stuff is decided on Sunday, Monday, and Thursday. And that's really the whole thing. And people complaining about national attention, don't worry about it. This is something that the team could use as fuel. I watched the Eagles ride that wave last year to the Super Bowl. I remember after the NFC Championship game, or actually after the divisional playoff game when they beat the Falcons, Lane Johnson, we're sitting there at his locker. He has a dog mask on, and he's speaking to us through that, you know, at his post-game media scrum. It's something that just, you know what, make lemonade out of lemons. That's really what it comes down to.
Lastly, and this is going to be probably the most important question of this entire interview, how would you assess and break down the hug between Vrabel and Belichick at the end of the game?
Oh, man, it's typical. That's what you have anytime with Belichick. It's emotionless, and you know,
like that was a real hug.
The way it is,
like that was human. Like that was real.
Yeah, but it just—I guess you could say it was a real hug. But I mean, you know, obviously they have a thorough relationship, but I think that whole situation was just typical of Belichick, and he's one of those guys you just mirror his reactions, his emotions, and that's what I've read.
Wow, you did not see it the way I did. I thought if I had little thought bubbles, Belichick was like, "Bring it in here, big guy. Give me some. Oh, that feels good. Yes. Oh, good win. Oh, let me squeeze. Oh."
See, I thought he was just trying to prevent Vrabel from setting the 100-meter record, sprinting off the field to high-five everybody
like,
going
like
to the locker
Texans?
Room.
Like the Texans?
That's what he normally does.
Right.
Yeah.
So you didn't see it the same way I did. I really saw it as a human element from Belichick. Like, it usually his – I watch it – look, maybe I'm a little obsessed with it, but usually it is a flyby. I mean, he will barely even look at the person. And, I mean, he stopped in his tracks, and he gave him a – almost, a, dare I say, a bear hug.
Well, you know it's going to be a little more, you know, when you're dealing with an ex – the ex-coach, well, in this case, the ex-player, and I think that might be the difference. You know, you look at Belichick and his relationship with his players, I think is very thorough. You know, you look at Rodney Harrison, Teddy Bruschi, any of the guys who played for him. They love him, and he clearly loves them. So I could see where you're coming from. I didn't look into it.
Yeah, you need to go back and rank the hugs.
Go
back and watch the tape, and then rank your hugs, okay?
I'll do that.
Teron, always a pleasure. Thanks for doing this. Always good to catch up with you. We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate it. You guys, take care.